Well, we are in the book of Daniel still, and we are in chapter 4 this evening, so open your Bibles to Daniel chapter 4, and we see another interesting story, from the life of Daniel. In fact, this is the fourth, and it is the final story in which we see King Nebuchadnezzar. We see him in chapters 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the book of Daniel. In chapter 1, we saw that Nebuchadnezzar had carried away captives, and we saw the story of Daniel and his three friends and how they did not want to defile themselves with the king's dainties and how that all worked out, and so that was chapter 1. In chapter 2, we see a story of Nebuchadnezzar again. This time we see Nebuchadnezzar having a dream and Daniel interpreting that dream, that great image that had four different parts. And Daniel telling Nebuchadnezzar, "Thou art the head of gold." And so that was chapter 2. And then in chapter 3, we saw another story involving Nebuchadnezzar. And this time, Nebuchadnezzar builds a great image in the plain of Dura. And we see there in that story that he makes the commandment to make room for the baby. And so in the plain of Dura, he builds this great image, and he commands everyone to bow down and worship the image at the sound of the music, the instruments. And, of course, we don't know where Daniel is. Daniel's not in this story, but Nebuchadnezzar is, and the three Hebrew boys refuse to bow down and worship, and they get thrown into the fiery furnace, but, of course, come out unscathed. And so we have seen Nebuchadnezzar in the first three stories. And tonight we see the last of the stories involving Nebuchadnezzar, and that is the Nebuchadnezzar's dream about the tree, and so we'll get into that in just a moment. There's three other kings that we will see in the coming chapters. One is Belshazzar, not to be confused with Belteshazzar. Belteshazzar is who?
Daniel.
Daniel. That's the name that Nebuchadnezzar gave to Daniel. Although most of the time in the book we see him called Daniel, but we see a couple of times in this chapter both names used. But this is Belshazzar versus Belteshazzar. And but we'll see Belshazzar in chapter 5 and in chapter 7. And then we see Darius, some pronouncing it Darius. I pronounce it Darius. I don't know why. I guess it's because my history professor in college pronounced it Darius. And so Darius is seen in chapter 6 and in chapter 9. And then we will see Cyrus mentioned. And Cyrus, of course, was the great king, the king of Persia, that freed the Jews and allowed them to return to their homeland. And so he is mentioned in chapter 6, verse 28, and in chapter 10, verse 1. So we'll see those other three kings, and we'll talk about them and who maybe they happen to be. And there is some controversy about a couple of them, Belshazzar and Darius. There have been questions about, and there have been accusations by some of the enemies of the Bible that this is an example of inaccuracy in the Bible because we don't know who these guys are, especially Belshazzar. But we'll talk about that in next week. We won't get into that tonight. But anyway, once again, the skeptics end up with egg on their face about those kind of things. But tonight we'll finish up with the fourth story about Nebuchadnezzar. And this is Nebuchadnezzar and his dream, the dream of the tree. And so we've just put an outline on the board, if you can see it from where you're sitting. In the first three verses, we see the introduction to this story. And then we see Nebuchadnezzar's dream, that he tells the dream. In this case, he remembers the dream. Not in the other case, he didn't remember the dream. In this case, he remembers the dream. But he's not pleased with the interpretation of his wise men. He calls for Daniel, and Daniel interprets the dream. So we see Daniel's interpretation in verses 19 through 27. Then we see the fulfillment of that dream, fulfillment of the interpretation in verses 28 through 33. And just for simplicity, I call the epilogue, the end of the chapter there in the last verses of the chapter. And so we see this is written kind of a different style in this chapter. Did you notice that? That the style of this chapter is a little bit different. How is the style of this different? It's written, at least over half of it's written in the first person. There is some of it that's in the third person. But this is basically the account of Nebuchadnezzar himself. And so someone has called it an edict, but it's not really an edict. An edict is a command, and this is not really a command. It's been called a declaration. In fact, look at your first couple of verses of chapter 4. At least in the New American Standard, I think you see the word declaration there. But I don't see the equivalent word here in my... Does anyone have the New American Standard?
King James says, I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders in the King James, verse 2.
Yes, to show, mine says to show. I was looking for the word here, the comparative word. So to declare. And so some, and because of that word there, declare is a good word, a declaration. So it's not really a command. It's not really an edict. It's been called an open letter. It's been called a declaration. But whatever we want to call it, a confession. Some have called it a confession because really it is that as well. But whatever we want to call it, it is a story that is told by Nebuchadnezzar, a statement made by Nebuchadnezzar, a declaration made by Nebuchadnezzar. About the things that happened to him, this dream, the interpretation of that dream, and then what happened to him, and of course his praise of Jehovah God. And so we see in this chapter, and we see in this story that is told, once again, great lessons about his praise of Jehovah God, and the praise that we should have for Jehovah God. And so open your lesson, if you have your lesson books, we'll kind of walk through the questions again this evening. And so we'll try to answer the questions, but also kind of go through the text and just you make some points as we go. So Daniel chapter 4, beginning at verse 1, and let's read the first three verses. We probably won't have time to read the whole chapter, but we'll read some of it as we go along and answer the questions and try to hit the highlights here. So who would like to begin for us? Casey, would you read the first three verses for me?
Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me. How great are his signs and how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation.
Okay, very good. So question number one, how did Nebuchadnezzar describe God's kingdom and his dominion? Bonnie? Okay, so there in verse 3, he says, how great are his signs, how mighty are his wonders. Now, remember that he is now writing this after the story is over. And Daniel, of course, by inspiration, includes this declaration in this writing, but Nebuchadnezzar is writing this in the first person. Somehow it got from Nebuchadnezzar's declaration in his writing or his statement in the first person into Daniel's and in the inspired book of Daniel here. But Nebuchadnezzar is writing this, and undoubtedly he's writing it after the story is over. The whole thing he's writing after the story is over. And so he addresses this to who? Who does he address it to? To everyone. Verse 1, Nebuchadnezzar the king, and to all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell on the earth. Peace be multiplied unto you. That phrase there, peace be multiplied unto you, kind of reminds you of the New Testament greetings, doesn't it? We often see grace and peace be multiplied in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ and the writings of Paul and others. And we're told this was a typical greeting that went all the way back to the Old Testament times of someone who was writing something. Peace be multiplied unto you. And so he says, it seemed good to me to declare or to show the signs and the wonders. What signs and wonders is he talking about?
Interpretation of his original dream.
The interpretation of the dream? And what was the fulfillment of that interpretation? Well, he became a madman for a period of time, didn't he? And then God restored him to his to the throne. And so all of that's the signs and wonders. This was a sign. What's a sign?
Miracle.
A sign's a miracle. When we think of a sign, did y'all see the new sign when you drove up? Isn't that nice? It's a miracle. It only took 6 months. In October, the 1st of October, before I left for my China trip in October, they said 4 to 6 weeks. 4 to 6 weeks. And what's that been? October, November, December, January, and half of February. So 4 times 4, that's 18 weeks instead of 6 weeks. There have been a number of things that have gotten in the way, none of which were our fault. So I'm not really happy with them. We're going to do some negotiating about the price. But anyway, that's another story. A sign. What does a sign do?
Tells you something.
Well, it tells you something, doesn't it? The signs as you ride down the street. Why do people put up signs? They put up big things, you know, a shop at Sam's or eat at Joe's Barbecue. Why do they do that?
Advertising.
To tell you something. Signs tell you something. In the New Testament, the miracles. Yes, Steve was right when he said miracles. A sign was a miracle, but a sign tells you something. The miracles of Jesus told us something, doesn't it? What did these signs tell us? God rules in the kingdoms of men. That's what Nebuchadnezzar said. These were signs and these were wonders. And the powers that God has wrought. And so how great are his signs and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom and his dominion from generation to generation. So that's the declaration. Why such a powerful declaration? Well, he's going to go ahead and tell us. And he's going to tell the story. Why he begins with this declaration, this powerful declaration, that he is powerful, he has shown me signs and wonders, and his kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. Why would he say that? Well, he's about to tell us why he's going to say it. Ron?
Yeah, it's actually a lesson in humility.
Yeah. It ends up to be a lesson in humility. It's a lesson in pride to begin with, isn't it?
Pride and arrogance.
Yeah, pride and arrogance. That ends up finally with him learning his lesson. Okay, question number 2. And so, what was the king's reaction to his dream?
He was spiritually terrified.
He was terrified. And so in verse 5, he says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace, and I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. And so because of that, what did he do?
He called his wife in to interpret the dream.
And so one of our true and false questions dealt with that. What was it? True, false question number 1. Nebuchadnezzar asked the wise men to tell him the dream. True or false?
False.
Why is it false? I thought, wasn't that what we just read? Okay, in this case, he doesn't ask them for the dream because he tells them the dream, but still, he apparently was not pleased with their interpretation. They weren't able to interpret it. And so he says, the wise men, therefore I made a decree to bring all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might give unto me the interpretation of the dream. And came the magicians and the enchanters and the Chaldeans and the soothsayers, and I told the dream before them, and they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. And so this list is pretty close, or maybe one name. I didn't really compare them myself, but one of the commentaries said that there was one name different than the list we saw back in chapter 2. But basically the same list, the same names here of these enchanters and these magicians and all the wise men that came before him. Ron, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I was going to just mention verse 4. You know, it says, I was at ease in my house and flourishing in my palace.
Yeah.
I mean, he was at the pinnacle of his power.
Yes. Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
He said, I have no fear of anything.
Yes, and we're going to see that in the dream, aren't we? The dream, the size of that tree and the branches, how large it is and how many animals find their shade in it and all of that is an indication of his power and his greatness. And he was at the height of his power. Well, they didn't know what to do, but who did he call next?
Daniel.
And so in the next couple of verses, we see that he calls Daniel and Daniel comes before him. Well, number three, what was the tree like? What was the tree like about which he dreamed? Okay. It was in the midst of the earth, the middle of the land.
It was strong and large.
It was strong and large.
Pleasant to look at.
Abundant fruit.
Abundant fruit.
Provided shade and birds to dwell in.
Okay. Okay.
It stretched to the sky.
It stretched to the sky and
it was visible to the ends of the earth.
It was visible to the ends of the earth. That's a big tree. That's a big tree. This is a dream. This is a vision that he saw. And he's wanting to know the meaning. He's wanting to know the interpretation. Here is this tree, and it is huge. It reaches to the sky. It has wonderful fruit, enough fruit for all of mankind, all the animals that find shelter underneath it, and it's visible to the ends of the earth. Now, that's a big tree. And I think that points to what Ron just was saying a moment ago when he talked about he is at the height of his power. He was at ease in his palace. As a great and powerful king, he could be at ease in his palace. He had conquered a lot. The kingdom had been stretched out in many different directions. So here is a powerful king, the most powerful king of his time. And as Daniel said, you are the head of gold. So here is a powerful and a rich king, and he is at ease in his palace, and he sees this vision. Well, question number 4. Who cried, hew it down? Or something like that. Okay, what verse is that in?
13.
Someone reading for us 13 through 18. Let's read 13 through 18, the second part of the dream here that Daniel talks about, and then we'll answer some of the questions connected with those verses. 13 through 18. Bonnie?
I saw in the visions of my head on my bed, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down from the sky. He cried aloud and said this, cut down the tree and cut off its branches, shake off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the animals get away from under it and the fowls from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump in the earth, even with a band of iron and bronze, in the tender field of grass, and let it be wet with the dew of the sky. Let his portion be with the animals and the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from man, and let an animal's heart be given to him. Then let 7 times pass over him. The sentence is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the Holy Ones, the intent that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomever he will, and sets it up over the lowest of men.
One more.
This dream, I, King Nebuchadnezzar, declare the interpretation, because all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation. But you are able, for the Spirit of the Holy Gods is in you.
Okay. So, question number four, we asked, who cried, hew down the tree? And some of you answered, a watcher. What does that mean? Who is this? Who is this watcher? What might we assume about this watcher?
Angel. Someone from God.
As an angel? Why the term watcher?
Had no power. Had no power.
Had no power? I'm not sure. It's as good an answer as any, I guess. He is called a watcher. Well, just notice verse, what's that, verse 13? And I saw in the vision of my head upon the bed, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down from heaven. He cried aloud. It almost sounds in verse 13 as though it's two people, a watcher and a holy one. But it seems the better interpretation is, and the language, according to Dan King in his commentary, would bear out, the idea is he's not stating two different people. He's kind of saying a watcher, in other words, one who is a holy one. So this is a holy one who is a watcher, not two people, but one. The second phrase is kind of a description of the first one. And then it doesn't say they cried out, but said he cried out. And so in the next verse. So it seems to be one, not that that's a big issue one way or the other, but he says there is a watcher, a holy one came down from heaven, and he cried aloud. And so, it doesn't call him an angel, but that seems to be what it is. That seems to be the best understanding. And someone turn over to Psalm 121, read the first few verses there. This is a messenger from God, isn't it? In his dream. Of course, this is a dream. An actual angel didn't come down and talk to Nebuchadnezzar. This is a vision that he's seeing. And so he's seeing a vision of something. He's seeming like a dream. And in the dream, he sees a tree. And in the dream, in the vision, he sees a watcher coming down. And so it's not an actual angel that came and talked to him, but it's something that he saw in his vision, in his dream. Okay, what were you saying, Mary?
That the NIV uses the term messenger.
Messenger? Okay, so someone read Psalm 121, the first three or four verses, and I'll tell you when to stop. Ron, you want to read that?
I will lift up my eyes to the mountains, from where shall my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to slip. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep.
Okay, hold it there. So what does that say about God?
He's always going to be there.
He's always going to be there?
He's not going to take a break.
He's not going to take a break. Is he watching us all the time? Let's put our word watch back in there. Is God watching all the time? Do we ever escape his gaze? Is he always? Yes, he's always watching. He doesn't sleep or slumber. He doesn't take a nap. I wish I didn't need a nap sometimes, but I almost always do.
It's one of the things that Satan used when Jesus in temptation.
What's that?
Your foot to slip.
Yes, yes, yes. But in our point here is that God is. Never sleeps and never slumbers. He is always watching. And here is a messenger, here's an angel from God who is called a watcher, bringing a message from the watcher, I think is the point, at least the point to me. And so this angel comes with a message. And what is the message? What is the message that the angel brings? Here is this wonderful, beautiful tree. And the angel says, what?
Cut it down.
And look at all the different things it says. Cut down the tree, cut off its branches, shake off the leaves, scatter its fruit, Let the beast get away from under it and the birds from its branches. Then in verse 15, what does he say to do?
Leave the stump.
And what does he do with the stump? An iron and bronze band around it. What in the world does that mean? Depending on who you ask. There's four or five or six different opinions about why that brass and iron band. Bonnie?
One of the opinions that I read said that it referred to when, in the days, if someone was mad or out of their mind, they would chain them and keep them in chains. And in fact, they even gave a reference. I don't know if I kept it or not. If I find it, I'll tell you.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of the things that is suggested, that literally they may have chained him for his own protection. We're going to see in a moment that he becomes mad. He loses his mind, doesn't he? And in that, they may have chained him. Anybody read any other ideas? Daryl?
Again, it's what I read. It may or may not be true, but to preserve the integrity of the stump, anticipating future use.
Okay. You could say makes sense, but don't hang your hat on it. The bottom line is we don't know. We're not told the interpretation of this. We're not told why. And some have suggested that idea of a metal band being put on the stump to preserve it. Now, we know in real life, if you cut down a tree and all you have is a stump, if you can put a metal band on it, you could paint it, you can do anything you want, but it's not going to regrow a tree, is it? But this is a dream. This is a dream. And so the idea may have been to, in the dream, in the interpretation, to preserve the stump, and someone said to keep it from cracking or to keep it from whatever. I don't know that any of that makes sense as in the real world, because a stump is a stump and it's not going to grow, I don't guess, but in this case, to preserve it or to protect it or to hold it together and take care of it and for the future, because he did have something planned for him in the future, didn't he? Any other ideas?
It's the kingdom.
The kingdom?
The kingdom is the stump.
Okay.
It's not going to get, if there's a band around it, then it's not going to be conquered by someone else.
Okay. Somehow to protect it or to, yes, and that someone else is not going to take it over.
That the tree is falling down.
Yeah.
It's coming apart. That means your government officials are falling apart.
Yeah.
Somewhat like the United States. But you keep going down, and it comes to a point where you just, government-wise, is falling apart as well. So the people and the government are falling apart, but the country stays as a whole.
Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts? Ron?
Sometimes, even though you do cut a stump down, you'll still get a shoot to come back.
That's true. So, but the shoot usually doesn't come out of the trunk, does it? It comes out of the root?
Yeah. No, it can't come out of the trunk.
Can it come out of the trunk? Well, depending on the kind of tree it is? Of course, you cut down your crepe myrtle and it just comes right out the top again, doesn't it? So it depends on the kind of...
Right.
It depends on the kind of the tree you're dealing with, the kind of bush you're dealing with. Well, whatever the meaning is, there's three or four different suggestions that are made, and I don't know which one is the best.
If you go back to the idol, there was different iron and clay meant different things.
Right.
Here it says that the iron was the divided kingdom.
Yeah.
So it's dividing again. It's starting to fall apart. That's holding it from dividing.
Right, but the iron in the other image had to do with a kingdom that was much later and not his. But it might have that same meaning. I don't know. It has some similar meaning. I'm not sure. It seems like the best guesses. Well, again, there's six or seven, and who knows which is the best ones. Dan King prefers the one that Bonnie first suggested, that literally they may have fettered him or chained him. Others like the idea of that somehow this symbolized the holding of the kingdom together. until the time that he would return and lead it again. So, but what does, but going on from that, verses 15 and 16, what does the text tell us? 15, 16, and 17. Because it's been cut down, he says, let it be wet with the dew of the heavens, and let its portions be with the beast in the grass of the field. Let his heart be changed from a man to a beast until seven times pass over him. An indication, and we see in the interpretation, or what happens in the following this interpretation, that Nebuchadnezzar does become like a beast, doesn't he? After the tree is cut down, after he loses his kingdom, after he loses his mind, then we see what happens to him, that he is turned out into the pasture. He becomes like a person insane, and maybe they literally did chain him. But whatever the case was, he acted like a beast for a period of time. What happened, to what extent was this dream that the living may know? Question number five. How'd you answer? To what intent was this dream that the living may know?
That the Most High is sovereign over all kind, all kings.
Okay, it goes back to our theme, doesn't it? That the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men. What did the greatness of the tree represent, number six?
Babylon.
Greatness of the tree represented, yeah, Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon, didn't it? And the greatness. We notice in verse 19, how did Daniel react? How did Daniel react after he of course, this is, we kind of got ahead of ourselves a little bit in the fact that what we see up through verse 18 is just simply Nebuchadnezzar telling Daniel about the dream. And we got into the interpretation in our discussion of it. But he hasn't given the interpretation yet. And before he gives the interpretation, how did Daniel react to this dream and the fact that he now got to sit and tell the king the interpretation of it? Daryl?
Not really anxious
to let the king know what's going to happen to him. Yeah. He wished that this dream had been about his enemies. Yeah. Yeah. And we wouldn't be anxious. Who likes to be the bearer of bad news? Who likes to be the one to have to come and tell someone something they really don't want to hear?
Especially a king in that time in history.
Especially a king in that time of history, as Steve said up here. Because these monarchs were all powerful, weren't they? And they had a very short fuse at times, and they didn't like to get bad news. But it's kind of interesting, Nebuchadnezzar's reaction to this. When Daniel hesitates, what does Nebuchadnezzar say?
Don't let the dream or its interpretation trouble you.
Yeah. He says in verse 19, second part of middle of verse 19, he says, let not the dream nor the interpretation trouble you. And Belteshazzar answered and said, my Lord, the dream be, this is what Daryl was talking about, my Lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof to thine adversaries. And so he is saying, I wish it wasn't what I'm going to have to tell you. I wish it was about those who hate you and those who are your enemies. And so what is the interpretation? In short, what is the interpretation? And so, he says, the tree which thou sawest, verse 20, and which grew and was strong, its leaves were fair, its fruit was food for all, etc., etc., etc. Verse 22, he states very specifically in verse 22, it reminds us of what he said in chapter 2 when he was talking about, he says, you, O king, are the head of gold in verse 2, in chapter 2. What does he say here? It is thou, O king. Thou art grown and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reached unto the heavens. And so the idea of the tree reaching to the heavens was his greatness reaching to heaven. Thy dominion to the ends of the earth. And you saw a watcher come down, hew down the tree, destroy it, nevertheless leave the stump, etc. And so he says, let this be portion unto the beasts of the field until seven times, verse 23, until seven times pass over him. And so, as Bonnie said, there's been different ideas about the seven times, how long exactly this was to last. Some have said 7 weeks, some have said 7 years, some have said seven seasons, seven times. Some versions say seven seasons. And someone has suggested that to the Babylonians, I don't know where they got this, but in the Babylonian records or whatever, they really thought, I guess, where they lived of two seasons, winter and summer. And so seven seasons would be 3.5 years, which would fit, I guess. But I'm kind of with, I liked what Dan King wrote about this. Dan King, in his commentary, talked about the number seven, of course, being oftentimes used symbolically in the Old Testament and the book of Revelation in the Bible, and that the seven is symbolic of a perfect number or a complete number. And the idea of seasons, Dan says, the writer didn't specifically tell us. He could have said weeks, he could have said years, he could have said if he was trying to be specific, but seasons is a more general term. And he wasn't being specific, and so therefore Dan's interpretation is, this is a complete but indefinite period of time. God's not trying to tell him a specific amount of time. He's not trying to lay on to him a specific amount. But he is telling him that you're going to be in a bad way. Your mind is going to be crazy. You're going to be in this situation where the dew of the heavens is going to be on you, basically for a complete and perfect period of time. Until when? Until when? Until you know. Until you know what? That God rules in the kingdoms of men. Until you come to understand that God rules in the kingdoms of men. And that would be a complete and perfect, then it had accomplished its purpose. The punishment was for the purpose of bringing him to that understanding. And when that time was fulfilled, where it was seven, I'm with Bonnie, it was probably longer than 6 weeks, 7 weeks, or his nails and hair wouldn't have been that long. But it was long enough for him to have long hair and long nails and all of those things that the way it is described, and for him to come, I think if I'd have gone mad and been out on like a beast, walking around on my arm, my hands, and, you know, acting like a beast and letting the waking up every morning with the dew on me, it wouldn't have taken me 7 years. I don't think it would have taken me 7 minutes, but maybe. But he until he humbled himself to the point that he came to fully understand that God rules in the kingdoms of men. And it's kind of interesting to me that this is where Nebuchadnezzar leaves the scene. This is where he leaves the scene in the book of Daniel, with this admission. And with this vision, and with him coming to that conclusion and stating that here at the end of the chapter, where at the end, the epilogue, if we skip down to the end of the chapter, where he makes that powerful statement in verses 34 through 37, that I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes into heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever. For this dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doth according to his will in the armies of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can say his hand or say unto him, can stay his hand or say to him, what doest thou? At the same time, mine understanding returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my majesty and brightness returned to me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom. and excellent greatness was added to me, and I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, for all his works are truth, and his ways justice, and those that walk in pride are able, he is able to abase. So what a powerful statement here by Nebuchadnezzar after he comes to understand how great and how powerful this Jehovah God, the God of the Hebrews, the God of heaven and earth, the Creator God, how powerful this God really is. And to really take that in and take it into his heart and to understand it and to communicate that way in this declaration, this statement that Nebuchadnezzar made. Okay, Ron?
Verses 7 and 18, verse says, you know, that the Chaldeans and the wise men could not interpret a dream.
Yeah.
But they said earlier, well, you tell us a dream, we fail to interpret.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now they have a dream, they still can't interpret.
Yeah, that's true. I'm surprised they couldn't have made something, but maybe what they were saying he knew didn't make any sense. I don't know. Maybe they, but it says they couldn't interpret it. Okay?
It says they could not make it.
Yeah, because it was a king.
Okay, question. Let's see if there's any other questions here that we want to go over before we completely run out of time.
Also, he was given a second chance on 27.
Right, Daniel offered him. Ask him
to. We covered number 6. What did the greatness of the tree represent? Until when did Nebuchadnezzar be driven from men? We talked about that. Number 8, what counsel did... Oh, that's a good one. Question number 8. Question number 8.
It's in verse 27.
What counsel did God give to Nebuchadnezzar? What counsel did God give to Nebuchadnezzar? To repent, basically to repent. He says, and it's kind of interesting, doesn't it? In fact, this is before what happened, isn't it? And we'll get to that before we finish up here. But this is at the end of the interpretation. After Daniel interprets it for the king and basically tells him this is what's going to happen, he says to him in verse 24, "Therefore, O king, let my counsel be accepted of thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. If there may be," what? What's he saying? What is Nebuchadnezzar... What is Daniel telling Nebuchadnezzar here?
Perhaps if you change your ways and you become righteous, God will give you further peace and tranquility.
Yeah. He's telling Nebuchadnezzar, this is the dream, this is what's going to happen, this is the interpretation of it, but if you will get away from your sins, and you will show mercy to the poor, you will get away from your iniquities, then maybe God will lengthen the time of your tranquility. Does God respond to repentance on our part? Does God respond to repentance on the part of the man who will abandon his ways and serve God and turn back to him? Absolutely, he would. Well, Nebuchadnezzar didn't do that. How long was it? How long was the length of time from that until?
A year.
12 months.
12 months, it says. And what was kind of the trigger for this? What was the trigger for this? We see there in verses 29, 30, 31, 32, and that the range of those verses. What was the trigger that caused this to happen?
Begging by well, he did not give him God new credit.
Okay. And so...
Verse 30.
And so he says, is not this great Babylon which I have built for the royal dwelling place by the might of my power and the glory of my majesty? And while the word was in the king's mouth, what happened? While the word was still in his mouth,
departed from you.
Yep, yep. O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee, and thou shalt be driven from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the fields, and thou shalt eat the grass, etc. And so it happens just as God said, and he was driven among men just as he said, and his hair was grown like eagle's feathers just as he said, and his nails were like bird's claws. And then he came his mind to himself, and then we see the statement here at the end. Okay, we almost got through with all the questions. True or false? Nebuchadnezzar, we already said that one. Number two, the sight of the tree reached the ends of all the earth. True or false?
True.
Number three, Daniel knew Nebuchadnezzar's enemies would like the dream.
True.
It doesn't say that.
It depends on how you interpret that one. I put false. What he said in verse 19 was, "My Lord, if only the dream applied to those who hate you." And so the meaning seems to be, now I'm sure his enemies would have liked it, but that's just never stated. As Bonnie says, that's really never stated exactly that way. So the main thing is not what's true. It's understanding what was done there. Number four, 12 months later, the king boasted of his power. He later describes God's dominion as everlasting.
True.
Okay, very good. On to chapter 5 next week. And another king, Belshazzar.